You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
New Zealand has joined an international pledge to their promises to reduce methane emissions over the next decade, but no methane reduction policies and targets would be changed. The pledge, which was announced earlier this week at COP26 in Glasgow, promises to reduce global methane emissions by at least 30% from 2020 levels by 2030, but each country doesn't have to meet that target individually. James Shaw is the Climate Change Minister and he will be joining the COP meeting next week, but he joins us now. Kia ora, Minister.
Kia ora.
So the Paris targets back in 2015 said global warming temperatures have to be limited to below 1.5 degrees. So frankly speaking, cutting 30% of methane emissions only is not going to make it happen.
Well, methane, actually it would make a very significant difference because methane is an incredibly powerful greenhouse gas. It's about 80 times... Has about 80 times more impact on the climate in a short-term sense than carbon dioxide does. But it degrades very rapidly in the atmosphere over the course of about a dozen years, whereas carbon dioxide stays in the atmosphere for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so actually, if you stopped all carbon dioxide emissions tomorrow, then... you'd still get global warming because of the amount of carbon dioxide that we've put up into the atmosphere previously. Whereas if you can reduce methane, especially by, you know, that target that you're talking about of 30%, then it starts to have what could best be described as a cooling effect. And so what that means is that you're kind of pulling your long-term lever and your short-term lever at the same time. And one of my frustrations, I guess, with climate policy in general is that, you know, countries have made a number of commitments to reduce emissions in general, but, you know, many have not had very specific plans or have had plans that only relate to carbon dioxide and not to methane. For us, it was important to, you know, sign up to this because... it means that you've got over 100 countries now that are going, well, yes, carbon dioxide is critically important. We absolutely must do everything that we can to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. But actually, methane is also important and especially important in the short term whilst we're trying to do everything we can to stay within that threshold of 1.5 degrees.
Right. But the targets in our own Zero Carbon Act said we only have to cut methane emissions by 10% based on 2017 levels by 2030. How much of that is going to contribute to the pledge that we made?
So there's actually two things. So first of all, that 10% reduction is phrased as at least 10%, and not a maximum of 10%. And that the actual emissions budgets are driven by the advice of the Climate Change Commission. And they felt that we could actually do slightly more than that. I can't remember exactly what it is, but I think it's about 12% during that period of time. The second thing is that only applies to biogenic methane, which comes from waste and from agriculture. And what we have said is that fossil methane, so the methane that's emitted when you're doing oil and gas operations, that actually has to come down to net zero by 2050. So the pathway there for fossil methane is very steep. And the declaration that we signed up to is heavily focused on fossil methane because it does have a different cycle than agricultural methane.
Well, but the biggest methane polluters in the world, like Australia, China, Russia and India, aren't on board the same declaration that we are. Is that going to hamper progress?
Well, yes. Obviously it is. And like I said, in terms of fossil methane, which is really what the declaration follows on all methane, but it does particularly emphasize fossil methane. As you say, those countries that you've just named, their methane is primarily associated with the oil and gas industry, so it is fossil methane. But I think over the course of the last few years, what I've seen is that where you've got these kind of agreements where you get large numbers of countries, and in this case it is over 100, so that's kind of, you know, roughly half the countries of the world have now signed up to this, it does put pressure on those larger players, and it can take a bit of time, but, you know, you have started to see, for example, even Russia now has signed up to a net zero target, albeit for 2060, but they have at least created a rod for their own backs in that regard. And that's taken 6 years since the Paris Agreement, but it is starting to get movement in the right direction.
Okay. Well, you're going to Glasgow later this week.
I am.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to the trip?
No, I'm not.
Why not?
Well, look, let me put it this way. You know, first of all, there's still a pandemic raging. Second of all, you know, what we're doing is going over to Glasgow in the middle of winter to sit in a conference room, witnessing some of those petrostates do everything they can to undermine the fabric of the Paris Agreement in order to preserve what they perceive as their short-term economic interests. And I have very little tolerance for countries who prioritise their short-term economic interest over a livable atmosphere, and yet that is what they are doing. I find it, I mean, it's critically important that Aotearoa is represented there, and that we are able to amplify the voices of the Pacific Island states in particular, who, you know, are deeply concerned about climate change because of the impact it's already having on them. But it is an incredibly frustrating experience, and it's the reason why progress is so interminably slow, is because, you know, whilst the general momentum is now, finally, after 30 years of talk, starting to move in the right direction, you do have this group of countries who are, you know, able to kind of stymie and to slow things down.
Well, COP26 is already on the way, and there are already several announcements related to development and deforestation. Are you happy with the progress that have been made so far?
I like to bank every win that comes through, right? So the declaration on preserving rainforest and on preventing deforestation is, you know, also really significant because, you know, in particular with the Amazon and then some of the equatorial rainforests in Southeast Asia and in Central Africa and so on, these are the lungs of the world. And so, again, a bit like the methane pledge, having countries sort of go, actually, you know, it's important and we need to kind of start getting our act together on this in ways that we haven't in the past, is progress. But for me, the you know, the proof of the pudding is always in the eating. And so it's good to have that kind of political will, but it has to degenerate immediately into hard work. And that's the bit that I'm really looking for.
What sort of things are you hoping to achieve while you were at Glasgow?
Well, at a broad level, I guess in my kind of, you know, wildest dreams, it would be if we can get the countries of the world to sign up to commitments over the course of the next 10 years, which is a critical period, to reduce their emissions in line with a 1.5 degree world. And the most recent assessment was that we were sort of headed towards a 2.7 degree world, which would still be catastrophic. It's better than it was a couple of years ago because we were looking at about a 4.2 degree world. So, you know, again, things are moving in the right direction, but you know, we're running out of time. Hmm. So that would be my kind of ideal outcome. But there are also some specific work programs that we're looking at, and one of those is around transparency. So the Paris Agreement kind of said, you know, there should be transparency, but it didn't quite say how. And so there's been this now 6-year negotiation going on about what countries need to abide by in terms of, you know, how accountable they are for their targets and for the actions that they take to achieve those targets. And it's grindingly slow, but to me that's probably the single most important thing that could come out of it.
And one thing that caught my eye during past couple of days is Prime Minister Narendra Modi of India saying he expected wealthy countries to fund $1 trillion in climate finance. I kind of want to know what you are thinking about that.
Tell you the truth, I actually missed that. It is clear that the developed, wealthier countries of the world need to lift their game. You know, a few weeks ago, you would have seen we announced that we were just more than quadrupling the commitment that we'd made. The previous commitment period, we put in $300 million. The next commitment period, starting in the middle of next year, we're going to put in $1.3 billion New Zealand dollars. But it has been an absolute devil of a process getting the countries of the world to sign up to enough to meet even the existing target, which is $100 billion US dollars per annum. And we do know that starting in 2025, that target will move north of $100 billion. I think the idea that it would move to a trillion seems unlikely, given the resistance towards even delivering on the current commitment.
Hmm. And it's going to be a long flight from Wellington to Glasgow and from there to back. Are you planning to offset your emissions?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so we do that anyway. It's sort of automatic. All government ministers and members of parliament travel as offset. It's not as good as not flying at all.
Hmm.
But if we have to because of our work, then we do know that we're helping to restore some of our forests around the country.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.